Join the conversation at bulala.co.
The question is, if you were given the opportunity to dramatically improve the living conditions of the neighborhood you grew up in, to the extent that 15 years later, the neighborhood gets gentrified, would you do it? So yeah, that is the question. So, but before you give me your answer, right, let's act like you've already had this conversation and we are 15 minutes into the conversation. And you are now explaining to me why you got to that decision. You don't have to tell me the decision. Just tell me why you got to that decision. Why or how?
I basically got to the decision by considering that the world is progressing.
Mm-hmm.
And with or without gentrification, there is going to be some form of change
mm-hmm.
in our communities, like it's bound to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, if people are sort of better off,
mm-hmm.
I mean, I guess I considered that maybe the people that were gentrified would still probably be the niche of, you know, the upper middle class or whatever, but in my head, probably they'll still be black.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of makes me feel better.
Okay.
Yeah, I guess that's how I rationalized it. I rationalized in the sense of the community getting better, and hopefully by the betterment of it, it means that more people have opportunities, and maybe they don't even need to stay in that place anymore,
okay.
which is very idealistic.
Mm-hmm.
I guess, but I think a state of stagnation is something that I dislike.
Mm-hmm.
But I also understand that not everybody perceive stagnation in the same way.
Mm-hmm.
So if it was my choice, then I would say probably yes.
Okay. Cool. So what do you think would, but I think you hinted at what would happen if you choose the opposite decision. With the whole stagnation and everything.
Yeah.
But
I mean,
worst case scenario, what is the worst case scenario?
The worst case scenario is just, for me, it's stagnation, feeling like you are sort of running around in circles.
Mm-hmm.
While everything around you is progressing. I feel like if that is, if you feel like your external environment or even your surrounding are expanding, if you also want to expand, it will be a sense of contestation against your spirit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I think about my neighborhood in specific.
Mm-hmm.
Like my neighborhood back home in Polokwane, it's a colored neighborhood. It was designated a colored neighborhood by the apartheid government.
Mm-hmm.
So in apartheid, only colored people lived there.
Yeah.
Post-94, you know, black people were allowed to build houses, black people were allowed to move in.
Mm-hmm.
And my mom always, like, reminds me of that, saying that, you know, for her, that is a form of progression,
mm-hmm.
you know, because she was able to move closer to town and closer to people, I mean, and closer to the center, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And sort of because colored neighborhoods were better than black neighborhoods,
mm-hmm.
and it was very close to an Indian one. But even then, you can see the difference. Like, you can see the financial circumstances. Like, Indians were better off,
mm-hmm.
but you can see it. Like, the colored neighborhood is, and the Indian neighborhood was separated by a railroad.
Mm-hmm.
And the type of houses that were there, you can tell the difference.
Okay.
And for me, if my neighborhood stays the same, like, throughout all time, like, now it's integrated and whatever, but if it, like, stays the same and people don't push to have more, you know, growth in it, I think that it'll be a source of angst amongst the people that live there and amongst maybe the youth. Like, if I feel like maybe if you had to grow up there.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also a thing of sometimes in that growth is not perceived in the same way.
Mm-hmm.
So for my mom, she has been there for however long we've been there now, and maybe the sense of environment is what she liked.
Mm-hmm.
And what gentrification can bring might be something that totally makes her feel alienated in her home, like in within her surroundings, and it's her house, not like she's gonna choose to be a little bit or go somewhere else.
Okay. So, yeah, I think that point kind of leads into my next question. Like, if a community is getting gentrified, by that, the initial question also implies Hore, the living standards are improving. Like, whatever was there initially is getting improved. Like, if there was only one library, there's two libraries. If public transport was not a frequent thing, it becomes more accessible, and schools become more accessible, clinics become more accessible. So the people who live in that area are now better, in a better position to actually improve their own lives, because the community they are in is actually fostering that growth in them, right? But why is it that when a community is getting gentrified, we do not consider the fact that the people who are originally from that community are also increasing their income with all the things that are coming in?
Are you asking why is it that we don't consider that
mm-hmm.
the income is increasing?
Yeah, the income of the community is possibly increasing. Like, I think I looked up the definition of gentrification, which I'm going to have to look up again because my memory is Pentium 2. Yeah, but one of the definitions is the restoration of rundown urban areas by the middle class, resulting in the displacement of low-income residents. Like, does gentrification not also translate into someone who was previously low-income becoming a middle-class person?
Not always.
Okay.
And I think the term came up. Most of the time, it's not what happens.
Mm-hmm.
Because even if, like, for example, you can have better schools within your own neighborhood, but it doesn't make you able to afford them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, just because something is there,
okay,
doesn't mean that you are able to access it. It's kind of like the fact that you have, let's say, possibly that there is, I don't even know. I don't want to say a library, because I would assume that a library you can.
It's a public resource. Yeah.
Yeah, you get what I'm saying. Like a school is a perfect example, actually, or a hospital.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say, for example, your neighborhood gets gentrified, the middle class come in, and then they build a hospital.
Mm-hmm.
All right. The likelihood of that hospital being a public hospital are low.
Mm-hmm.
Right, which means that it's going to be a privatized hospital, and the people that are going to afford it are going to be the ones in the middle class.
Okay.
And yeah, just because it's available does not guarantee access.
Okay. Cool.
It's the argument I usually make about like the difference between availability and access.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's like in let's say rural areas or like informal settlements, right?
Mm-hmm.
Informal settlements, they were previously, well, they're still disadvantaged. Most of them are still poor and low income households, people that reside in them. So one of the things government decided, okay, cool, let's build our DPs and all of that, and let's put electricity,
mm-hmm.
right? And it did, I'm not saying that it did not have an impact in the way, like it made it available to them. They made electricity available to them. And I guess in a form accessible because they can use it, but it doesn't mean that they can afford it.
Okay.
So then most households, you see that they're still using like paraffin, the electricity at the same time, or one more than the other because of what? Because of the inability to access it because it's not affordable, although it's available.
Okay. So then I guess it also comes to a question of, is there a time frame that it allows people of the community to actually ease into the gentrification? Because I think the problem of a private hospital being built in a community and people not affording it is the pace at which it happens. So is there a time frame whereby we can say the people of this community currently cannot afford a private hospital, but in 20 years, given that we have this public library, given that we have this these other public resources, you start with the public ones first, and then we say 15 years later, we are going to build this private hospital, and people of this community are going to be in a position to actually afford
I mean, it kind of feels optimistic at best,
mm-hmm.
to say that you should
make more income.
I don't see people delaying their progress for others.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You know what I'm saying, right? Mm-hmm. I don't think that somebody is going to move into a neighborhood and then assess that the community that I've lived in is like so and so and so. So maybe we need to prioritize. If anything, what the middle and upper class tend to do is go for privatizing most things and actually making things accessible. They like exclusivity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that is my personal opinion.
Mm-hmm.
I think for some reason it's like the fact that you've made it, you have to have like your club needs to be exclusive.
Okay.
So I don't think when you prioritize having public services over private ones in an effort to let people catch up.
Okay. So if you identify, let the poor who cannot adapt with what's happening in the area move to a community that they can afford. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so yeah, that was a question. If you are gentrifying, then you should let the natural selection take course in terms of those who can afford, should afford, and those who can't afford, they should. It's life.
I'm not of the opinion that that's what you should do.
Mm-hmm.
I am saying that that's usually the mode that seems to play out in our environment.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm not for it at all.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and I said this is my view of gentrifying neighborhood. Maybe I do change my mind, but I struggled with it.
Mm-hmm.
I struggled with the idea of it.
Okay.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
Okay. All right. Thanks for the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
I'm personally of the view that you should do it. I would. Not that you should. I would do it. And my reasoning is, I believe, our government is useless personally. Our South African government is useless. And there's certain problems that we have. And while we are waiting for the government to act on these problems, the people who might be capable to assist are not given the opportunity to assist, because they are told they should talk to the government about it when they are actually in a position to assist. Probably can have a number of examples, but I think my most recent one, or not even recent, like the one that's in my mind right now, came when Limpopo had that textbook delivery problem for the whole year, and then bana ba feletse ba ngwetse metric di textbook di sa fitla.
Yeah.
I'm willing to bet that there was someone in these communities who had a car, van or whatever, who was like, emanyana, are driving real outing rola ta di textbook tseo. Bana ba khona ba lala tsone. But because you have to do everything via the department, which has already failed by not delivering the books on time to start off with, even you trying to assist is not a possibility, or it's not a plausible thing for you to do to speed up the process. So I believe if we let those of the means do what they want to do or what they can do, then we can probably deal with some service delivery failures better than we are currently dealing with service delivery issues now. You know? And on the point, the income, or the low income people being driven out, for me personally, I'm more interested in how, if a community is slowly transitioning from a low-income community to a middle-income community, how does it happen that a family stays a low-income family. Like, if you are seeing that everyone in your neighborhood is into rapping and they are making a lot of money from the rap industry, and as a whole family, no one decides to start rapping so that they also partake in this economy that rap has built, why does...
Very simplistic, and that's not always, that's usually not the case. Like, people who gentrify are not people who have like jobs that you can just get into. Like, people who gentrify are doctors, are lawyers, are people who gentrify educated individuals.
Yeah, but
it doesn't mean that, like, you can wake up and decide that, okay, people are gentrifying my neighborhood, so I'm just going to go and become a doctor. Like, opportunity does not become available just because you decided that, or just because your neighborhood is transitioning. It doesn't work that way.
Yeah, but with this point, I think I'm more leaning into a neighborhood becomes gentrified when a new industry gets discovered around it. And obviously that's when the doctors and everyone else comes, because if all the people who are coming for this specific industry that has just popped up in this community, we need the doctors, they need the lawyers, they need all these different things, and then the lawyers are just going to be close by. But the people who are in the community saw the factory being built for whatever, the rap factory, if I'm still being simplistic. And they saw the first rappers to come out of the rap factory. And this was happening over a number of years. So why is it that there is the possibility for that low-income family to remain low-income, even as the rap factory is solidifying its position in the area? So I'm more, I want to also look at that question as well, but maybe not for now.
I don't know how to express it, but like I said, I feel like you're making it very simplistic. Like, I feel like just because a factory, like, opens near you, it's kind of like saying, you like, let me give you an example of what happens with mines, right? Like, mining communities. Like, mining communities in South Africa are one of the poorest communities in South Africa. Logically, you'd think that because there are diamonds that are found here, you basically just found millions on the ground. People come, people move there, people, basically gentrify the neighborhood. But then you need to realize that the type of opportunities that you are afforded are not the same type of opportunities that people who come to gentrify your neighborhood have.
Initially.
Community member, you will not be afforded the same opportunities as another person.
Initially.
Like, for example, not initially, it never really changes. That's why mining communities are the way that they are. That's why most people now, the type of reforms that people are fighting for now is giving people actual skills. Actual skills that can be transferable after a mine closure or whatever, or an ability to move up the hierarchical income. You get what I'm saying? Because just because a development is in your neighborhood does not mean that you can benefit from it. And if you do benefit from it, you're going to benefit from it at a minimal level. At a minimalistic level, and only those that are lucky. Like, if you are sort of placed within the right context, like, for example, right now, what most mining companies do is that they take graduates from, like, the community that they are basically exploiting.
Mm-hmm.
So they make these internships or whatever graduate program, and they're like, you must be from this community. And that's basically you being placed like the right place at the right time.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not from that community, then how do you then benefit? And if you're not a graduate from that community, that low income community, you will never see the benefit of that.
Okay, cool. So yeah, there's things like those programs you just mentioned. And I think what you were mentioning, the whole mine example applies to the whole of South Africa, because if you look at what Wits, Kimberley, what other big mining place do we have in our, mining city do we have in our country?
I mean, Rustenburg is a thing.
Yeah. So if we look at all these cities and we look at the people around them, they have technically not benefited from the fact that there's a mine there. What I'm interested in is then the question, like, ever since we started mining in South Africa, how is it that the average South African is not even, what's the word, researching what actually makes them mine the most money, or what makes Kiddy Beers the most money? They have a few mines, I think. I think Ellen Gray has a few mines, but I'm not sure. I don't know about Ellen Gray.
One of the most mines.
Yeah. But I don't know what makes them the most money. And it's weird because Gauteng, how you'd think that gold would be an integral part of the folklore or what we are taught while we are growing up in these communities that are some distance from the mines. Like, Wits is named after Wits, Vasprez, blah, 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 the word I can't pronounce. And that was also a mining type town, but I don't think kids in the neighboring areas actually think about the logistics of mining. So I'm more interested in how or why do these big things come to certain communities and certain cities, but the people of those neighborhoods never, or don't, let me not say never, don't actually get in tune with the logistics behind why that thing works and how that thing actually makes money so that they can enrich themselves in the long term.
I mean, there's a number of reasons that happens.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, it boils down to our education system.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can't have, I think that's why most of us as young Black people, especially the ones that go to varsity,
mm-hmm.
you start having like when your brain starts to actually open up and you see all like the bullshit that is like infiltrated in like all the systems.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I feel like, I don't know, but I feel like most people do.
Mm-hmm.
Especially depending on like the type of interest that you have, like we kind of lose our minds a bit.
Okay.
I see it in the people that are interested in politics and everything. But if you are interested in like development and all of that and social justice in particular,
mm-hmm.
a lot of the things that will happen will like literally drive you insane.
Okay.
I feel like I'm at that point.
Mm-hmm.
I'm passionate about social justice.
Yeah.
But I think it boils down to, and with me, it has always been the concept of how you South Africa auctions the environment like the highest bidder.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And in that it auctions the people as well.
Okay.
For manual labor, for minimum labor, because then you don't put policies in place that you actually make sure that those businesses don't export the people that work for them. You don't care. So you just, you know, you just sell it off and you're like, it's a system, as long as we're getting money sort of, it will function.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So for me, it's an education perspective. Like, we don't know about mining companies. We don't know about the minerals that are mined in South Africa because it's not part of our curriculum.
Mm-hmm.
And we are not taught to be inquisitive about it either.
Mm-hmm.
So it just boils down to that. If you get to a point or a stage where you are able to be inquisitive about it, then all on your own, that is great. But some people need a push.
Okay.
And some of us had to get to varsity to get to that push.
Okay.
So that's where... Excuse me, my alarm went off.
Sorry for eating into your nap time.
It's all right. So I was saying that for me, it boils down to that. It boils down to education, and also it boils down to the fact that ignorance is bliss, not necessarily for the people that are in those communities, but for the companies that come and that function within like those communities. They would rather have communities that are uneducated and probably misrepresented or underrepresented in general,
because
they can get the most from them. I can't say that I blame communities for not knowing, and I can't even say that I blame them for buying into it, because the marketing is solid. Like, if you go into a community and you hear, because what they promise you is a job. They come in like, we're going to build the road, we're going to like jobs, they streamline it into jobs. Or they say that, oh, maybe we'll build like a hospital or something, or we'll, you know, like I personally work in the field. So for me, it's pretty painful like to see the things that happened. Like, and I think there is some form of reform, like now, in terms of the mining companies and what the government requires them to do in terms of planning and all of that. But for more than 50 years, they were left unchecked and they were left to do whatever they want. And hence, this is the
reality
we are in. We're having ghost towns, we're having mining, acid mine drainage in most of our mines in Joburg and the first part of Rand area, basically. And yeah,
okay,
I say it's miseducation. It's like more of like being uneducated.
Okay. Pilari, thank you very much for the conversation. I think we've covered quite a lot of stuff, and yeah, any shout outs that you would like to send to the people?
Shout-outs? Like, you do those? I don't even know.
Yeah, we're doing shout-outs.
Oh, wow. I was not even ready for this, but thank you for having me here. Shout-out to my family and friends.
Okay,
cool. I feel like they know who they are.
Like, oh, good.
Don't worry, I'll do better next time.
Okay.
I know this is a thing. Now I'll write down actual names.
So
I'll call them out.
Okay, cool.
Like, hey, Flo.
Okay. I think this is the first time I'm doing this, so I'm not even sure of the recording. I've tested it before this, but I'm only going to find out after the conversation whether or not it recorded and if it recorded the whole conversation. So hopefully it's well, and then I can actually get an episode out. But
well, I hope so.
But
even if we don't, I enjoyed the conversation
nonetheless. Okay, cool. Well, so next time we'll do it again, and then I would have learned a thing or two on the technical side of it.
Sure. I will have written down all my shout outs.
Okay, cool. Right, cool. All right. Okay. Sure. Stay well.
You too. Good night.
Bobo.